Welcome to Starfleet Universe On-Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website with Chrome and go to www.talkshoot.com and search for call ID 17702 and you can participate. Of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. If you want to follow me on the Twitters, you can follow the SFU On Call Twitter account that will allow you to know ahead of time what the topic is going to be for this evening. You know, sometimes this is a little bit close to the time, but definitely I like to get it up beforehand because at the very least I need to know, let people know where the YouTube stream is, you know, what the URL is for that so that people can listen to it that way if they want to. Also, I have a personal account, Paul Franz. So to find that one, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. And if you don't mind listening to about some tech, I follow different people from techies to some of my favorite religious people, including Father Robert Balasair. I'm not sure if I follow Bishop Barron. Obviously, I'm very Catholic, so... That's a warning if you follow me on Twitter. And, of course, Franz Games, FranzGames, also, which will announce client updates and different things happening with Franz Games. And, of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast and is available on various feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. Steve Cole is busy working on Caps Log at number 53, blogs, and also art for the Gorn Master Starship book, some Shapeways stuff, and other projects. Also, he got top marks from the surgeon on his six-week checkup, so it's always good to hear that his surgery went well, and he's still doing great after the surgery. It's good to hear. Steve Petrick is busy working on SAP updates, also quality assembly and shipping. Also, he's been working on a new project, which is the Tholian Master Starship book. Awesome. And, of course, he's doing... I'm assuming probably the finishing touches on the Gorn Master Starship book. I'm not sure where he is actually on that project. There was no mention of it. Now, one thing I really don't mention that much, which is Simone. Simone is the graphical artist that keeps everything up and running on the website, keeps the graphical portions updated and all that kind of thing. Simone will be leaving very soon to take care of her first baby, which is due in September. Also, they hired Samantha Todd as her replacement. And Simone says using her last days to train Samantha, graphic design student at the local university near Amarillo, which is always good to see, to get a college student in to learn the ropes and also have a job right out of college. And I'm sure it's a little cheaper, but hopefully she will do an awesome job. I'm assuming she will, especially if Simone, trains her right. And I'm sure Simone will. Gene was busy working on updating the text catalog and the product update list. Also managed, of course, the blog feed. She came down with a cold and decided to stay home for a lot of the week just to make sure that no one else got sick at the office, which is always good to see. Obviously, certain things she can do remotely. I'm assuming that for certain things she can email back and forth, though. Obviously, certain things, like she obviously couldn't work on the updating the Prime Directive. I forget what version. I think it's the GURPS Prime Directive. And because of she probably needs the software that's only at work, which is fine. Moving onward and forward, we've got the SFB Online tournaments. No moving on the Masters Tournament run by Andrew Koch. But we do have movement on Rad 48. We have a final. And guess what? Boys and girls, children of all ages, we have a Hydran Civil War. So no matter what, it's going to be a Hydran who wins the Rated Ace Tournament. And what I'll probably need to be doing this week is send out... Actually, maybe this week or 2 weeks, one of those two. I will be probably sending out announcement for the next RAT tournament so that people can sign up and we can have another one. Yay! The question is, who's going to be the next judge? That's always the big question up for, no, I was going to say up for debate, but it's not really a debate. I was just finding a judge for it should be easy enough to do. Also, moving on to the library report, we actually have some progress. Frank did 20. Looks like some of them were actually repeats. So nothing there. Also, there's one of them I have to look at because I think there was like two of them that are brand new conversions that I'd missed. And I have to go back and fix, which are from the Paladine, but we do have progress on converting some of those old SSDs to the third gens. Completed conversions are 2,460, yet to be converted down to 865. That brings the percent complete up to 74%. Yes. And with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, the Paul Friends, welcoming you to the Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight's going to be an interesting one. Of course, we have a wonderful topic that's going to be coming up, but also this is going to be a YouTube-only thing, just because of, looks like, TalkShoe is being a buttface. So that hopefully there'll be no one else joining us other than Russ and Dave. Obviously, if you're looking at the YouTube feed, you will notice that Dave doesn't have a YouTube account. He will be listening, but he will not be able to. I don't think he'll be able to add any chat messages because I'm pretty sure that requires an account. But I assume Russ is also. Russ maybe has an account, maybe? I'm not sure. He didn't say. Hopefully he does. And so for tonight, what we're going to do is something. And that we're going to still stick with the topic for tonight, which is the Zindi tournament tactics. And one thing, just a note for next week is that I will be getting a new computer. And actually, it's kind of interesting. Minor story there, which is my wife's computer died. It is a 2008 MacBook Pro. It finally gave up the ghost. So 11 years, it's done its duty and it's died. So basically, I'm going to give her my computer, which is only 5 years old, and that should do her just fine for the next 5 years. As it is, it has an SSD drive in it, but I've been running this whole thing in clamshell mode with an external drive just kind of hanging off it, and that's how I've been using it. So I haven't even really been using the internal SSD drive all that much. So I'm just going to be basically just be giving it to her, and she will get everything on from her old computer onto this. I'll be doing that soon, so I'll be switching to a new computer, and I'm hoping, just praying here, that I will hopefully be able to add a video feed of myself, and hopefully it will not break the camera for starting next week, because I think maybe people might want to actually see my lovely face and hopefully not see me fall asleep, because there are sometimes, I'll have to admit it, that things are a little bit weary. I'm a little weary because it's a late Thursday night. In addition to that, I usually get up very early. Fortunately, today is one of those days I actually was able to get a nap. Yes, I'm an old fuddy-duddy who I'm. My body, I think, is starting to catch up with me, saying not sleeping that much, because I usually sleep maybe 5 to 6 hours of sleep a night, you know, so. yeah, a few weeks, Paul will have a studio and guests. Well, no. What you'll probably be seeing on this lovely, lovely stream will be my lovely, lovely face and probably some of the pictures behind me. I might actually have to start thinking about lighting. Jeez. The only reason... Well, the problem with Dave just let you know about Barry. Barry has moved down to Kentucky, and that makes things quite interesting. I'm just hoping at the moment that no one tries to call in for this evening, because if they try, they will be unsuccessful. Just because of, as I said, I'm doing this completely YouTube because of TalkShoe is being a butt face. And I'm unable to call it for whatever reason that is. And I'm having, and I do not know why that is the case tonight. But hopefully we won't have an issue with the rest of the recording. As I said, I'm hoping I don't have to spend another $200 or $300 on like a dock. Cause I know currently I've got, already have like an eight port USB hub, and I ran out ports. Currently, my last port is available for this mic that you're currently hearing me on. Dave, I'm not gonna have the mic hanging down for the. You'll look like a live podcast at Newsmax channel. that is well. The big issue right now is if you were actually here, one thing that you would notice is that I have hardly any lights on whatsoever. I have a small little lamp right beside my desk because I usually like working mostly in the dark, or at least darker than most people. This reminds me of a quick story, which is one day I get off of work and I get caught. I move from my work computer onto my regular computer. I start, it's getting darker and darker. I'm not realizing this at the time. The only house light in the house is the little light that's beside my computer. All the rest of the house is dark. My wife has not come home yet, and I realize I come out of the room and go, crap, it's dark out. So I then have to use the flashlight of my phone and move around the house a little bit and turn on some lights so that when she gets home, she won't be walking into an actual dark house. Yeah. Well, hey. Russ, SFU After Dark, we'll just have to wait and see. Yeah, definitely you'll see my ice water. You will see that. That's one thing you will see me. You'll be seeing me drinking my water. And I said, if I have to, if I'm hoping that this is a minor... it's me, Paul, the Velvet Smog, friends, taking you through the small hours with smooth sounds of SFB. I'd have to practice that voice, because I know my voice currently is not that smooth, that cool, that melodious. I would say I can practice it, but... I did not plan to have a job in broadcasting, and to say the very least, that's still the case. I'm hoping that should work out next week. We will just have to wait and see. And the funny part is that my dear sweet friends in the chat room, and TalkShoe is still there. And that's why I'm still leaving it. I'm still streaming that. And I'm still reading their comments, believe it or not. So that will be a big change for next week. We'll see how that works out. See if people actually like to see my face, or they're just, I can see comments from YouTube going, please don't. Hide your face, it's too ugly. I you'll get to see my wonderful gray hair that I have gotten from my father. Actually, I would say I started to gray actually prematurely when I was in my 30s is when I started to gray. Of course, now I'm in my 50s, and so having gray hair, that's kind of normal. Okay, cool. Russ actually is in the chat for the YouTube, which is good to see. Hi, Russ, in the chat. So that will be interesting to see. Hopefully people will appreciate that. I would love to be able to do a kind of video, recording like a Skype cast, a Skype video chat with somebody else and have it so that I'm on the feed, and hopefully we can do something like that. Not sure. Obviously not with Barry now. I'm hoping no one calls in today. And if TalkShoe keeps being a butt face when it comes to trying to call in, we might actually move to YouTube. And in which case, then I have to figure out alternate arrangements when it comes to dial in. Probably, as I pointed out before, I would then probably set up a conference call, and people would dial into the conference call instead of dialing in to TalkShoe. Now the question, and then I would probably keep uploading my podcasts up to TalkShoe as long as they allow me to. I understand that. Oh, okay. Russ is saying that I'll be willing to do that when animation stuff is ready. Actually, I saw a quick thing of Russ's animation stuff, which actually looked really nice. It really looked great. So I can't wait to see more of Russ's stuff. It's been a pleasure to watch that. And if I can get that up on YouTube, maybe I can maybe even add that to the feed here. And also maybe if Russ has his own channel, then I could actually post a link to the that was a fail version. A fail version? Are you mean a full version? But I'm hoping that we can do that so that more people can be looking at that kind of stuff. Yeah, Dave says he's looking forward to Russ's animation too for those people who are just listening. And I'm very cognizant of that, because that's the way this thing started, and that's the way I will keep that in mind now and always. I'll just try to anyway. Oh, fail. Okay. Russ saying that the stuff that I got to see was throwaway, which I understand, the first go around to test it out and so forth. Hopefully in the... You sound like my daughter. My daughter's a perfectionist, to be honest, when it comes to things like that. Obviously another... Okay, but anyway. Moving onward and forward, let's get this thing on the road instead of still rambling on about the futures of the podcast and what's going to be happening in the near future, and possibly distant future, in the way I'm hoping, because TalkShoe has been the way we've been doing things for so long, and unless it actually stops working, and right now it stopped working tonight. I tried to call it for 15 minutes, and I got from no. There's an answer, and then the automated system wouldn't activate. Or the other one, which is always funny, in that it's the carrier redirect, basically saying your carrier redirected the call incorrectly. Basically, you got to hold the wrong phone number. How it knows this, I do not know. So, okay. We already passed actually the real 500th episode. Actually, it depends. I'd have to look back at the old episodes. Because depends upon what you consider the real 500th episode, because I know that there are some episodes where I increment the episode number, and in some cases there were like the podcast for Happy Thanksgiving. So you might not consider that a real podcast. Or there are other ones where I actually incremented the number, which were basically previously recorded content from the Origins convention. And there are some others which I didn't increase the number, but I posted them anyway as special content. So I'd actually have to look back. My guess at this point is that the real 500th episode, if we get rid of all of those pre-recorded, which I'm not sure if you call those episodes or not. But if you consider the real 500th episode to be the episode that I actually recorded and streamed, I'm not sure what that would be, you know, because currently we're at episode 518 is what we're at the moment. Whether that actually is the quote-unquote real 500th or not, or what's considered real, a real episode, you know. I can't say. But to me, at this point, it doesn't matter. I've already, to me, the more important part of the episodes was that we've been doing this for over 10 years, you know, and actually very soon it will be we will have done it for over 11 years, you know? So I don't want to miss the celebration. To me, David, as I mentioned, I think the big celebration for me was the 10 year anniversary. I will probably celebrate again in another 4 years, as we, you know, that in that we will be, you know, I'm planning on keeping on doing this for another 4 years, possibly another 10 or 20 years. I don't know. I don't want to think too much about the future, because some part of that future, and I know this is going to happen one of these days, which is, of course, Steve Cole is going to die. It's at some point in the next 20 years, he will die. It would be is a pretty good guess, because Steve Cole is older than I am, much older than I am. Because I don't think he was putting out a game. You can see he originally put out Starfleet Battles. It was in the 70s, I think it was. I forget the exact year. I think it was I want to say 75, but I don't think that even that's it. I'd have to look that up. Probably look it up on Wikipedia. It'd probably be my best guess. Best place to look that up. But anyhow, and I was born in 66, so I'm assuming that Steve Cole is at the very least 10 years older than I am. So he would be in his 60s now. And if he survives into his 80s, well, he might, you know. But anyhow, Russ is saying it was a 76. Yeah, video feed goes well. I might have a sound stage in 10 years. That would be interesting. Turn this place into a sound stage. Because I still remember the original idea of doing a sound stage of some sorts that is put up these walls, temporary walls, which would absorb the sound so it wasn't as bouncy. And this was when I was down in the basement of my old house, because it was really reflective in there. And I moved it upstairs, and it actually is much better, because there was actually carpeting versus there was no carpeting down my basement. You know, it was just a concrete slab. Actually, there was some minor carpeting, but not. It still bounced a lot more than I really wanted it to. But anyhow, okay. Russ grew another mullet. That I That'd be interesting to see, Russ. Oh, we are definitely, this is one of those which is a sidetrack city today. I apologize. We're not keeping on topic for this evening, but obviously the whole thing with talk show has kind of knocked me off kilter for this evening. But with that, I figure we're probably best if we move onward and forward. That being that, what we'll start the discussion, which is the topic for this evening, which is Zinti tournament tactics. The Zinti tournament cruiser is one of those tournament ships that I actually like. I like this ship, and one of the reasons why I like the ship is it's one of those ships that is you can just beat on it. It's I was going to say massive, but when it comes to the number of internals, it's got a pretty high number. You know, comparative to, like, the Orion, or comparative to, I forget if it's how close it is to the Wynn. I'm thinking the Black Shark. I'm pretty sure it's easily over 100. I miss that chart, and I really should look it up, because it was one in the Starfleet Times that what Steve Cole was producing while during the interim, where he actually couldn't publish new Starfleet Battles material, but I forget who used to own the publishing rights to Starfleet Battles. This is awful. Russ, Dave, please help me. I know Emerald Design Bureau reacquired the rights to publish Starfleet Battles from Task Force Games. Thank you so much, Russ. Because of, you know, they didn't have the right to publish, but of course, Task Force Games, they were so big, so far in debt, you know, that they really couldn't afford to publish. You know, it's one of those things. It's just weird. But during the interim, they published the Starfleet Times, and one of the things I liked about the Starfleet Times, there was one issue, of Starfleet Times that they had a chart. That what it did was it compared all of the tournament ships. And that was that's one of my favorite charts in the entire world when it comes to Starfleet battles, because of it gave you a good idea of number of internals, what the weapons were, things like that, you know, the shields. And it was a nice... It wasn't huge, but it was a nice piece that I think was one of those things that I'll always remember. And what I liked, one of the great things I loved about it was just counting the number of internals. And it's one of the things that it had as one of the columns. So you could have a relative idea of how much damage this ship could take. And to me, that gives you a good estimate of how tough the ship is. Obviously, we have with Hydran, it's got a pretty darn big central hull, which is fine. But and number of boxes, that and the Zinni are around equal or very close to one another. But of course, as I mentioned last week, the big issue with the Hydran is, of course, the Mizzy attacks. It can really just wipe the weapons off it pretty well. And as I said, it's the big issue with its weapons is that with its weapons, if you hit a drone, there's, you know, almost half your long range firepower is gone right there. Just like with the original Andromedan tournament cruiser, where if you knocked off one of the TR beams, that was half your firepower right there was gone. you know, which is one of the things why I always liked the idea myself, was to change the 2-tier heavies to 4-tier lights, so that it could survive a little better when it comes to weaponry and internals. And but an additional thing that it would do is also increase the amount of power required by 2 points of power per turn, because of to charge every single one. There's you're going 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, which is 8, versus 3 and 3, which is 6. So, but back to the Zinni. The Zinni is relative. It's a pretty tough ship overall. It's got a large numbers of phaser threes. It's got a small number of phaser ones. It's got 4 phaser ones. It's got, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. I think like 10 phaser threes, if I recall correctly. Which is a lot of phaser threes. So obviously what Zinni wants to do, and because of it's pretty much a pretty tough ship, you know, i.e. it's got quite a bit of internals. Knife fights. The Zinni ship likes knife fight. Now obviously the biggest issue with knife fighting with Zinni is, of course, it's not as the turn mode. It's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. It's turn mode C, versus if you're trying to knife fight against a Orion, you're in trouble because it's got turn mode A. And then with a Klingon, it's got a turn mode B, so the Klingon has a little better in that case. But that's knife fighting. The one great thing about those phaser threes is that it's got good defense, you know, when it comes to knocking out. If you're fighting another drone chucker, like the Klingons, like the Wynn, like an Orion who just gets goofy on you and decides to take a lot of drones. Just a quick side note, which I definitely is since I seem to be going on this tournament tactics binge of going through the ships. I'm definitely going to be going. I'm going to hit the Orion, and to me, that's one of those things that I've yet to see anyone do, and I would love to see it. Someone try, which is like an Orion ship with like 3 drone racks, or possibly even 5 drone racks. Try doing basically a small Zinni, because the ship comes with what I think 4 phaser ones. And then it comes with an additional, I think it's 6 phaser. The Orion comes with 6 phaser threes. Obviously, 4 of them are rear arc, but you know, but it's not bad. It's like rear arc right, rear arc left. So it's not awful. But anyway, getting back to the Zinni. So given that it has so many phaser threes, it makes it quite a bit more durable. Now, of course, you have to remember that every third phaser, I think it's from the volley, so it makes it very well protected versus a heavy weapon. Because I think every third heavy weapon has to be the best heavy weapon, if I recall correctly, versus phasers, which is the every third phaser needs to be of a volley, not of total damage, has to be the best phaser. And given that, that means the Zinni can actually take damage quite well. Obviously, the biggest issue with the Zinni at the moment when it comes to internals is that if it has drones knocked out, it's got a good bit of its strategy, its tactics that it's going to be using, which are based on drones, goes out the window. But of course, the wonderful part about the Zinni is, one, it's got 4 drone racks. 2, it's got the scatter pack. And 3, because of it's the Zinni, it's got quite a few type sorry, not type 4. Well, one type 4, because it can actually trade out. I'm pretty sure it's 3. It's 3. 3 type, the three swaps of 2 type 1s for type 4. So, which makes things really nasty when it comes, and usually what people do is, and I agree on this, which is to have your fast drones. Now, here's one of those things, if you want to be tricky. Now, this is one of those things that you do when you've played a person a long time, and just to keep them on their toes. And that is, instead of maxing out your fast drones, and more importantly, have your type 4 drones to be your fast drones, what you do is you max out your fast drones, and then your swaps for your type 4s, use them as medium drones. This invariably will catch your friend off guard. Or at the very least, keep him honest in that he will make sure that he labs every single drone that you've got. Now, because you have so many drones, and also another thing you have to remember is that the Zinni has double control. Double control is really, really important. It's one of the only, in fact, I think it is the only. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. It is the only ship in this tournament that has double control. That you actually can have 12 drones. Well, sorry, let's back up. 12 seeking weapons. Because because one of the seeking weapons, obviously, could be a suicide shuttle. And you can have 12 of those suckers on the board. Now, a lot of the Xinti's tactics revolve around the use of the scatter pack. How do you use the scatter pack? There's multiple ways of using the scatter pack. Number one way, of course, is the standard approach. Standard approach is that you launch your scatter pack on your initial battle pass, usually within the first 16 impulse. The whole idea being is to keep the scatter pack and a distance from your opponent. And then as soon as, make sure that it's within a certain distance, because you are remembering to have a distance parameter, right? For that scatter pack? Because remember, if that opponent, enemy ship gets greater than 35 hexes away from that scatter pack, it's gone. It no longer can track it, and basically you just wasted all your drones. Now, come on, we're fighting in the fishbowl. If you're fighting the fishbowl, how often is that going to occur? Very, very few times. The only time you have to do it is if you ever, ever, ever do a corner dodge right out of the boat, right out of the, right at the beginning. You do a corner dodge. Because if you do a corner dodge, he does a corner dodge, you both go for opposite corners. That is when the distance can be so great that it can no longer be controlled. The active fire control, you can no longer keep an active, a seeking weapon on a target. So, as I said, I just mention it just to have people keep that in mind and remember not be caught by that. Now, so that's one way is your initial battle pass. And then there's obviously, again, even with initial battle pass, there's two ways of using it. One way is that your drones follow you. You keep it, you know, a relatively fast speed to get ahead of the drones. You don't even have to go relative fast speed. Because you drop it off, the drones are going to be behind you. The other one is obviously you go slow, have the drones get in front of you, and then you have this wall in front of you so your opponent has to fight that off. Now, there's always a gotcha in doing that maneuver, in my mind, in that that requires you to slow down. This means you're giving up the control over to your opponent. Now, if you give up control to your opponent in that case, they still have to do something about the drones. Or at the very least, they have to turn away to run away from the drones. The good thing about that, obviously, because if you're flying behind the drones, you make sure that the drone's in front of you, and then you're going at a max speed, a speed 20, because you want to make sure those drones stay ahead of you. That your opponents, if they turn off, you got them good at that point. Because of what's the one thing you want to do? You want to control your opponent's movement. That is your number one priority. That is what drone users do. That's what any seeking weapons. Because as I pointed out a few episodes ago about using plasma torpedoes. Plasma torpedoes, the whole idea is to invoke fear on your opponent. Fear that you know, 30, 50 points of plasma is going to hit them, knock down their shield, give them 20 internals. That's why they run away. Which means they have to turn, and while they turn, you turn in, and boom, you get behind them. And that's why, you know, that's one of those benefits of having it so that you're behind the drones. Now, the beauty of having the drones follow you is the other thing, which is that you can come in and you can tractor them. And because it's one of those bold moves that you do to when you want to catch someone off guard. Just remember that the one thing about playing against another person in a tournament or playing against another person, period, is to, I think Sun Tzu said in The Art of War, know your enemy. That is critical. You need to know the way that your enemy thinks, because that will help you tremendously in deciding what tactics to use against them. Always is, always will be. So, in that case, you know, it's a surprise move. If a person is not, you don't think he'll expect it, which is always the case. The whole idea of tracking a person is to catch the person off guard. The only time it's not is when you beat them down so much that you have a lot more power than they do, and you know you can beat it no matter how much power they put into it. Now, that's a rare thing. Mostly, you're trying to catch them off guard and have it. You try to, the whole of course, start off the battle. The whole idea is outguessing your opponent. That's why knowing your opponent is such a critical thing. But because in that case, the great thing about that is that you can come in. He wails on you. Okay, so he wails on you. Let's say he even gets some internals on you. Big whoop. If you're able to close in, and you are able to If you close in to them and you're able to tractor them, or basically you're able to outsmart them, and then they fire on you, and either they forget about the drones that are behind you, or you're able to tractor them either on that turn or the next turn, because obviously in the first battle pass, the one thing that's going to happen depending upon how you approach it, because of when the Zini, it's one of those ships that, yes, what things you're going to probably do is you're going to be flying directly at your opponent. Why? You want to directly go after your opponent because you want the center of the board. You want that center of control, which is always a good thing. And that's one of those times where basically when you really want that control, that's when you are ahead of your drones instead of behind your drones. That's one way of doing it. Another way is of course with a scatter pack, is to, if you go fast and you hold the scatter pack in, and your opponent flies away, assuming there's enough distance, as in greater than 15, you could drop your scatter pack somewhere and use it as basically a floating nuclear space mine. You know, one of those captor mines, where when the opponent gets in close enough, all of a sudden, six drones. Now, there's some really cool things you can do with that, in my mind. Because, you know, let's say that you are able to place it in the middle of the board. And you say, okay, whenever your opponent gets within 15, an enemy ship gets within 15, it's called launch, or 10. You don't want to be too close, because obviously you want to have it so that if the opponent really wants to kill it, they can kill it. But remember about the small target modifiers, because it is a small target. So you want to have it so that at the very least it will launch when your opponent gets within the range of the small target modifier, where the small target modifier goes away. That's a minimum is going to be the range that you want if you're going to use it as a captor mine. It's a neat little tactic in my mind. Have I ever used it? Nope. The only reason, I have not, is because I haven't played the Zindi enough to actually use that as a tactic. Most of the time I play the Zindi, what I do is I will launch it as part of my initial battle pass. Now, whether I'm going to follow it or they're going to follow me, that is up all depends on the opponent I'm flying against. Because remember, also the one thing you have to keep in mind is that those drones will last for only 3 turns. So if they get launched into turn 1, by turn 4, they're gone. So if your opponent is able to and willing to run them out for 3 turns, if they're able to keep up the speed and run out those drones, they can do it without firing a single weapon. Now, of course, that's going to cost them what? That's still going to cost them power, because they're using it to keep their speed up. And it's possible that they might not have needed to keep their speed up. And if the drones weren't chasing them. Also, that's one of those benefits that always is there. Which is... drones cost zero energy to launch them. And so it's one of those wonderful, wonderful weapons where it has zero energy cost. So you can put the energy, any energy that normally would go into other weapons, would go into possibly a tertiary weapon, for example, in the case of like the Lyran ESGs. Or the Hydran's fusion beams. Though you can debate on the fact of whether a fusion beam on a Hydran ship is a primary weapon or secondary weapon. Tertiary weapon. Usually a secondary weapon is usually considered phasers. It's one of those two. I forget if but anyhow, given that it is, it's critical that you use those drones well, you know, and given that you are allowed to have 12 on the board, you can put up a massive, massive wall. You know, it doesn't have to be a single stack. And of course, if you're flying against Andromeda, you're not going to be doing a single stack, are you? You're going to be forming a wall because of that T-bomb. And of course, then there's all, and when it comes to Andromeda, it all depends on what the Andromeda has, because the Andromeda is still kind of flexible when it comes to what is the official one. You know, it's still in beta testing. It's crazy. Because depending upon which one is, if it has the 8-phaser 2s or the 6-phaser 2s, you can actually overwhelm the Andromeda with your fast drones alone. So, sorry, for a moment there, I had to reply to this new participant that's registered. So, moving onward and forward, what comes to those drones are critical to everything you do, obviously. Now, one of those nice things about the Zinti when it comes to the disruptors is that they're 180-degree disruptors. Bad thing about those disruptors is that they're FAR plus R, two of them are FA plus R, two of them are FA plus L. So your best, of course, is going to be the front arc. But because of those 180s, the plus R and the plus L for those two, that means you still, even if someone ends up chasing you, you can still fire at them. That is the beauty, the total and utter gorgeous beauty of the Zinti. Now, obviously, it can't fire 4 disruptors at them, but it can fire 2 of them. Just like the LDR can do exactly the same thing. It has 2 of them, which are fire extended. So there are 2 that actually can do. Now, obviously, it's a little different when it comes to Zinti. Now, the cool thing about the Zinti, if you really... So, in theory, now this is a rare instance in my mind, in that you can be going one direction and firing out your shield number 5 and turn. You know, so your shield number 4 is facing them, and then you finally turn again, and your shield number 3, now you can fire out your shield number 3. Will you actually be doing that often? Probably not. Because of to have all 3 of those shields exposed over a single turn, that can happen. But if you think about it, most probably your opponent is not going to sit there and let you just beat on his one shield. You know, if you turn, if you fire and hit them with the disruptors firing out shield number 5, and then you turn again and you get your shield number 3, and he sees that you can fire another. When you first bring that shield number 3 to bear, what is he going to do? He's probably going to change his shield at the very least. Assuming that you actually hit the first time, right? You did hit. So that's one of the beauties of the Zinti. And and you can do a face-to-face. It's one of those few ships, in my mind, that you could take a full 64 fully overloaded photons and you can still fight. You know? If the Fed hits you at range 8, tries to and hits you with 4 fully overloaded photons and phasers, you still got a lot of ship left after that. So you can keep going. Unlike some other ships out there, which they couldn't take that kind of damage. You can. And you can keep going. That's one of those reasons why I like the Zinti. Now, also, because of the disruptors and the 4-phaser 1s, obviously 4-phaser 1s aren't that great. Comparatively speaking to, let's say, the Saltorian. The Saltorian is a lot better at this, which is not the knife fight, but the saber dance. Because it's got a turn mode of C, it's not bad for a saber dance. You know, so you can keep things at a distance, in theory, and you should be pretty well off. Now, obviously, the one ship that's really made for a saber dance is, of course, the Klingon, and that's because of that the UIM is the one thing that just kills. It absolutely just kills. And it's one biggest pain in my butt in the entire world. That's why when it comes to flying against ships, that's one of those ships I truly do hate because of those disruptors. Okay, let's talk about different collection of ships real fast. Obviously, if you're a Zinti and you're flying the Zinti and you're going to be flying against a plasma, the great thing about the Zinti is that you've got your drones. They got their plasma, but you've got your drones. Top part, of course, about that is that because of it, they've got their plasma and you can't follow in your drones overall. Because what's going to happen is that you come in, you know, launching your drones. What is he going to do? He's going to launch his plasma to separate your drones from your ship from your drones, because he does not want to face them at the same time. And it's just like with the hydrant and the fighters, you don't want to face them at the same time either. But because as I mentioned with the Zinti, you can follow up on the drones and track them, or in the case of if you stay behind the drones, then have it so he has to deal with the drones first. Well, he wants you to be separated from your drones because of he can easily speed off, because he's gonna, because what is a plasma, the plasma guy is gonna do a plasma dance. He's going to run around. He's going to launch plasma, run. Because he's not going to want to get close to you because of, not mainly because of your drones, but obviously that is a factor in it, because of if he's facing your drones, that means he's going to be facing you. And he wants to, as I said, he wants to have those your drone, you and your drones separated. Now, so when you fight against them, you're probably going to do what everyone else does. Now, which is, you know, run out the plasma I need to run out the plasma. You need to run out the plasma while he's dealing with your drones. Now, in my mind, this is one of those times. This is one of those times that you might actually want to use. You might, and this might, want to use the captor mind scenario. Obviously, the only difficult part about that is that if you do set that up like that, what can he do? He can actually launch like his 20-point plasma F at your scatter pack, and it's going to be gone. It's going to be destroyed, and therefore there goes the drones. So that's one thing to always keep in mind. But the whole idea being is that if you can try pinch him, you are able to run out his plasma. While you're running out his plasma, he's coming towards your drones, so he has to either deal with them, either phaser them. Wild Weasel, because Lord knows, we all would like to see him do a Wild Weasel. Why? Because he stopped. When he stopped, now, because remember the one thing about Wild Weasels, you got a maximum of 4. If you use up all 4, and you still have drones left, they're in a I'm not going to say a big bag of hurt, because it's not a real big bag of hurt. But it is a makes things a heck of a lot harder, you know, because that means they have to either phaser them or run. That's the only options at that point. And when it comes to the Zinti, when it comes to flying against the Zinti, you will be use a Wild Weasel, because even in a Saltorian, which I like to fly a Saltorian and just kind of use its speed to just batter down the drones. Even against the Zinni, when I'm flying the Saltorian against the Zinni, I will prefer to have a Wild Weasel charged. Definitely 2, because you never, and I'll repeat this, and remember this, do not charge just 1 Wild Weasel. Always be ready to have 2 ready. Because of the problem with 1 Wild Weasel is that some cases you have to waste another Wild Weasel just to get your butt out of the situation that you currently just made yourself into by stopping so that you can launch that Wild Weasel. Now, obviously, if you can plan it right, and it's possible, but you can actually have it so that you can go to speed 4 and while, you know, Wild Weasel is at speed 4, and then be able to zip up to 14, which is a beautiful thing. So, but here's obviously the gotcha if you're flying against the Zinti, is that they've just like the plasma. You've got speed 32 seeking weapons. And why would you actually do an ED? You do an ED because of you don't have enough phasers to knock down all those drones. Or if you do, you're going to be in trouble for the next turn in some cases. So what will happen? Do an ED, launch that Wild Weasel, to have so the fast drones will take out the Wild Weasel. In which case now you have to figure out how to get out of the situation you just put yourself in. Because invariably, because the tough part is having it so that you can go from tacking to actually moving. Because the reason why when you're speed 0 you tack is because your opponent's going to be coming in after you. Now, if you beat them up pretty well, you know, normally, and they're going to veer off. Now, the problem with Wild Weasel against a Zinti is, of course, they can just come up nice and close. And since depending upon the situation when it comes to the actual ship itself at that point, what's the condition of the Zinni ship, he might just come in because he can take quite a bit of licking, you know, and still beat the snot out of you, you know? So, and I'm going to say this just because of, you know, the generic kind of tactics, in that, of course, one of the things that the Zinni always has to keep in mind is how many drones does it take for your opponent to say, I'm done, and use a wild weasel, go and wipe them off the map. Because obviously, if they do that, you have to take advantage of the situation and close. But also, the thing is, in theory, they can have it so that your 12 drones that you had on the board are now gone. One fell swoop, they are gone. Now, obviously, it's a rare thing that you actually have your stack of the drones from the scatter pack and from the ship at the same stack. You can do it. Would I actually ever do it? No. I would advise going against it, period. Just because of one of the things you can do when you actually have like two or maybe even three drones in a stack. Just two or three. You can actually build up a wall so that if they try to penetrate the wall, they're going to actually hit not two, they're going to have to hit like four or six, depending upon how they try to go through the wall. Or they have to try to fly around the wall. See, that's the beauty of drones. Drones are mobile terrain. That's the number one thing of why you use the drones. And obviously, you being the Zinni ship, you're going to want to be flying behind those drones, is what you want to do. And then as your opponent flies away, you can beat up on his weaker shields. Now, this is always a gotcha in my mind, in that when you hit their weaker shields, you know, the rear shields, that's a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. Because for rear shields, they can still, for the most part, fight behind. Now, there's always the gotcha. The big gotcha being da-da-da-da, if you eliminate their rear shields, they can't run away. Their tactics at that point become very limited. Their tactics will be having their good shields, the front shields, facing you. What's one of the few ways you can do that? That's going to be tacking. It's going to be basically castling. Now, castling is always problematic. In the case of if you've got two rear shields gone, I don't think there's a judge in the entire world that's going to fight. It's going to say, no, you shouldn't be castling. You should be attacking your opponent. Because at that point, if the opponent's done that much damage to you and they're that far ahead, yeah, I think you've got a good reason to tack, you know, sit and spin. Now, obviously, at some point, obviously the biggest issue overall with sitting and spinning is going to be the range. Your opponent gets to define the range, which when it comes to Zinni, what's the Zinni going to do? The Zinni is going to come in and get to like range four. Because that's the next bracket for the disruptors. Goes from 6 damage to 8 damage per when it comes to overloads. So versus, you know, if you're a plasmid, you obviously don't want anybody coming in that close. And so you'll be chucking plasmas. And when it comes to the Fed wants you to get the range 2. Now, they don't mind you getting the range 4. I forget what the weapons chart looks for a photon. But obviously, there's also quite a few quite a bit of number of phasers, which you can only come into range for so long. But obviously, at that point, drones. You know, at the very least, you could force them to use his wild weasel and duck underneath your drones. Or use his phasers to fight them, knock them down, so then you actually can come in and beat them. And in that case, what you want to do in that case, if there's for doing that, is you don't want them. You want to come in with your drones together. You don't want your drones ahead of you. Why? Because of you want to force them to hold back. They've got two choices. They can either wild weasel early, in which case they can't fire. Wait to wild weasel, which they can do. But again, you know, if, especially when they run low on wild weasels, if you only launch like three of your drones, that's enough of a wave to force any opponent to think about what they're going to do when it comes to tacking. You know, they're sitting spinning. So, should be, you know, that's always an issue for any game, is if your opponent sits and spins. But the great thing about the Zinti is its versatility. It can fire, it can do a long-range lobber of those drones. It can fight close in with the Phaser 3s and the Phaser 1s. It's got a turn mode of C, but that's better than against a Gorn or a Saltorian or even the Fed. All those have turn modes of D. So you can outmaneuver those ships. Obviously, your biggest opponent is the Klingon and of course, we have the Laren. The Laren always presents its unique challenge, which is, of course, the ESGs. And this is one of those times when what you want to do is everybody at once. You want that nice large drone wave to come in, and you want to be able to be right there, right at the single instant. This is one of those times that I would actually encourage to have your drones as a single stack, because you want all of your drones to hit at the same time. And if you can have your ship there too, you want them all hit at the same time. Because of what's the one thing you want to do? You want to have it so that the damage is mitigated, applied to as many targets as possible, therefore weakening the whole effectiveness of the actual ESG itself. Now, it all depends, obviously, how Laren plays the ESG. In the case of for pure drone defense, it'd be range one. Because I'm sorry, but I have a hard time believing that a Laren actually would want range zero. Because what happens with range zero? Range zero means that you are relying on your ESG to be up when the drones come in. And that your ESG will stay up. No, and then can you for most part rely on it? Yeah. But here's always the gotcha with that. I mean, and that is, if you being the Zinti, if you can knock out his ESG generators, if you can get those internals before your drones hit the ESGs, all the better. Because all of a sudden, his defenses went out the window. Because especially if he's relying on his ESG, the Uber, you know, protection against drones, and the generator goes, boo! They'll find themselves in a big, big bag of hurt. Now, obviously, knocking out both ESGs is quite a feat, because to do that, you have to do a proper Mizzy attack. And to do that, is the Lyran going to sit by and let you do that? No, he's not. At least if he can avoid it. Obviously, there are those opportunities that occur that you actually are able to do it. You know, that your Lyran opponent hets to get his one shield into proper arc, or to have his ESG be able to hit you or hit the drones right, you know, the right moment. But big surprise, that is the point, because if you can actually get him to do that, and you're able to, and you're at a beneficial angle, a beneficial track, where you actually can perform a Mizzia and successfully, you know, do that, then go for it. You know, obviously, if the first initial firing, you know, the initial volley that you fire, you got to make sure you bring down that shield. If you don't bring down the shield, and even that, there's always the issue, which is, of course, it's random. You have to roll a 3 or a 3. There's two ways of getting a 3 when you're rolling two dice. There's the 2-1 and the 1-2. But, hey, at least you have a chance. You know, if not getting 1, then if you don't get 2, hey, you might get 1. And the more chances you give yourself, the more that means there's a greater possibility of you actually successfully destroying an ESG. And even if you only get 1 ESG, if you only get 1, that's good enough. Because his drone protection has gone down greatly right there. Because I don't think the Lyran, when it comes against Zinni, he's going to try to use it against the ship. He's going to probably try to use it against the drones, unless the drones are out, in which case he'll use it against the ship. When it comes with LDR. LDR is a little different, just because of those crazy phaser Gs, which he'll be happy to use as drone defense. But of course, the wonderful part about that is that then you can come in nice and close. You can do a nice knife fight, and you don't have to worry about his phaser Gs. You know, they're not going to go against you. You know, like, obviously, at range 1, it could be like an overload photon, one of those suckers, because of, you know, if you maxed out damage, that is, obviously. So, I think we will wrap up this evening when it comes to talking Zinti tactics, things to keep in mind when you're flying the Zinti or when you're flying against the Zinti. You know, things to keep in mind and remember, if you're flying in the Zinti, you have a really tough ship. Remember that you can take the hits. You can take the internals, obviously try to avoid Mizzia, but if you're, as I said, you're one of the few ships that can take a fully overloaded photon spread and still live and still win at the end of that game. So, we had a nice talk about Zinni tactics and, of course, some of the possible future plans for this wonderful podcast, including, hopefully, a camera feed of yours truly, so then you can hopefully enjoy looking at something other than the chat room. Not sure what we're going to do about the chat room, but if I can possibly overlay the two, not sure. I would really like it if I could do that, but we'll just have to wait and see. Maybe I'll start using the OBS and see what OBS can possibly do, because possibly that might be what I'm looking for when it comes to having so that you can show the camera and also show the screen at the same time. And hopefully TalkShoe will work better next week, and we will continue this as a YouTube Live being a co-broadcast and not the only broadcast. And with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.